No, I mean, I thought you did amazing. You were very honest and real. And I mean, it's not easy. So I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. I think it's important to know that it's, you know, it's not, we're not perfect. And there are days when I'm sure I'm the worst person in this house. You know, I'm sure that I'm just crazy.
Yeah, that's my title all the time.
I'm sure, you know, but I just have to, like I said, I have to remember I'm not super mom. I want to be, I think I can be it, but I just fail miserably. You know, I just want what's best for them. You know,
yeah.
I think we all do as moms.
Yeah.
We carry so much though, Ashley. You know, it's like we just carry.
Hello and welcome to SimGap One Stories, hosted by me, Ashley Fry. Every couple of weeks, I spread information and awareness about a rare disease that affects my son, Nathan. It's called SimGap One. I chat with parents, siblings, caregivers, and others about the challenges and successes of their journey with someone impacted by SimGap One. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. Hello, everyone. In case you haven't noticed yet, fall is the season for SRF fundraisers. A few weeks ago, we heard from Suzanne Jones, who put on the second annual SimGap Soiree, Sparks for Hope, in Atlanta, Georgia. And we now know that she and her hosting committee threw a wonderful event and raised over $300,000 after expenses. It's amazing. And my guest tonight is also hosting her second annual fundraiser for SRF, the Scramble for SimGap, which we're going to discuss a little bit later on. She lives in upstate South Carolina with her spouse, Michael, 8-year-old SimGapian Miller, 4-year-old Georgia, and 2-year-old William. Julie Miles, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having me, Ashley. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. This is a long overdue conversation, honestly.
Yes, so it's been a little busy.
Life and planning events and raising SimGapians and other children. I mean, I don't know why we didn't schedule this sooner.
That's right.
So I want to start our conversation by discussing something that really hasn't come up yet in SimGap stories, just like regular old run-of-the-mill illnesses. So Julie and I both tonight and all day have been dealing with our non-SimGapian, our neurotypical children having an illness of one kind or another. And it got me thinking about how different and how similar at times regular colds or the flu or strep throat or viruses can affect our SimGapians. So let's just kind of jump in there. I find it hard to know when Nathan is not feeling well. And usually he hasn't been feeling well for a while before we really catch it, because his language and his communication just isn't quite there in order to tell us exactly what's going on the moment it starts happening. So what is your experience with Miller, and how do you know when he is not feeling himself?
So Miller is very similar in that aspect of with the communication barriers and telling us how he's feeling. For him, it's the same. Like, he can be getting sick and we won't even really realize it. And it's usually until we notice an increase in his behaviors. He will start getting a little bit more just unhappy about things, or a little bit more aggressive with like his wants and needs. And we'll say, you know, Miller's just not himself. What in the world could be going on? And a lot of times, more than not, it's because he's getting sick. He might wake up the next morning with a runny nose, or recently he had the stomach bug, and, you know, just that was just a couple of weeks ago. He was just off, and he woke up the next day and was just super, super sick with the stomach bug. And so, yeah. And then when he is sick, like in the middle of it, it's really sad a lot of times, because we don't know how he's feeling. You know, we don't know if he's got something going on, like some kind of virus, but he's having a headache with it, or he's having a sore throat with it, or the other symptoms that come along. It's really just a guessing game, and then we sort of have to treat the symptoms as we sort of think he's having them, based on sometimes even how, well, when I have a cold, I have X, Y, and Z symptoms, and we'll just sort of treat it that way because he's just not able to tell us. So sickness with Syngapians is difficult for sure.
Yeah. Something that I noticed too with Nathan is he will have more seizures, more frequent seizures when he, especially when he has a fever. And every once in a while, it's always like a, you said, a guessing game. We don't know what's causing these things to happen. And so sometimes when he starts having more seizures, we're like, oh, is he outgrowing his medication dosage right now? Is he sick? Is just something new happening that we haven't seen before? So that's sometimes a clue for us when he starts having some more seizures, some breakthrough seizures. And then also Nathan specifically will get more interested in cuddling and being sweet when he's sick. Whereas in his normal day to day, it's like, he does not want to be confined. He just kind of wants to do his own thing and not be contained. So if he starts getting sweet, I know something's up.
Right. Well, Miller doesn't have epilepsy. So he's not having seizures that we know of. And so that, I've heard that from many, many parents, that that's something that they notice right away when they're sick. But because Miller doesn't have any type of seizures, it's just still another guessing game of what might be going on with him when he's off.
So I want to know how you ultimately got Miller's diagnosis for SYNGAP, because one of the usual pathways to that diagnosis is seizure activity and getting an EEG and then running a genetic panel. So how did you land with a genetic diagnosis for Miller?
So our story is really, it's very similar to everyone else's. We started out at about 6 months old, like most everyone else has probably said, around that time when we started noticing that he was missing milestones. And even before that, we were first time parents. He's our oldest. And so Sydney had talked about how Emmett was just the sweetest, easiest baby who didn't cry. And really, that was Miller. I mean, people would tell us how spoiled we were because he was so easy. And again, first-time parents, we didn't know any better. We were like, yes, he is the easiest child ever. But around 6 months, we started to notice, you know, he's a little behind. I wonder what that could be. Probably nothing. We didn't really worry about it. At his nine-month visit, she asked me, the pediatrician, if he was doing XYZ yet. And of course he wasn't. And so she had told us between come back in a month and we'll see where he is. And then we'll reassess at that time. And I think I knew then, really, Ashley, like that something wasn't right. He should have been trying to crawl by then. He couldn't even sit up yet. And so, at this time, what makes our story a little bit unique is that I was applying to physical therapy school around this time. And, so it was a really stressful time for me personally, but then dealing with, you know, everything with Miller, it was really hard. And I remember we went back for his 10-month appointment and he still wasn't, you know, he wasn't going to go from not sitting up to crawling in a month. And she had told us that we needed to go ahead and start physical therapy because he was indeed behind. And so at that appointment, I think hearing that, that we needed to start therapy, it really hit me hard. I think in our whole story of with Miller, that 10-month appointment, or, you know, he was just that reassessment visit hit me harder than not necessarily the SYNGAP diagnosis, but I think that's when it was like, okay, this is real. Something is up. It's not just, I don't think he's just delayed because he's just delayed. Cause it was global. I mean, it was everything, you know, he couldn't pick up little baby food or, you know, puffs or something. And I mean, he definitely couldn't hold a spoon, couldn't do any of that. And so, that we began, therapies, and then the whole, like most other parents, we started, PT, OT, and then speech. I did start school. So when I was in school, we were doing all these therapies. And so I'm learning about development in children. And then I'm trying to diagnose my son. And it was just really, really hard for Michael and I, because I'm just thinking, could it be this? Could it be that? Could it be this? All the time. I would say I was obsessed with trying to figure out what was going on with Miller. So a few months into therapy, well, probably about 6 months, we finally saw a neurologist. And of course, she did sort of the basic stuff that we've all done. We did the MRI, we did microarray, we did some blood work. All that came back normal, of course. We then saw audiology, ENT, developmental peds. And finally, this is all fast forward, but finally our developmental peds said, okay, I don't think he was five yet. He was almost five. It's time that we see a geneticist. And in hindsight, I wish we would have pushed back sooner on seeing genetics than we did. It really wouldn't have changed anything with his development. I don't think it just would have given us access to, of course, community, you know? Yeah. And so I always think like, oh, we would have pushed back harder instead of, we saw the developmental peds so many times before we finally went to a geneticist. And so in January of 2020, we finally saw a geneticist, and that appointment was really just, it was really good because it was just confirmation that what I think Michael and I knew in our hearts was something was going to probably show up. We knew the odds were significantly low that we would get something, but I just knew that we would have an answer. So we did testing for Fragile X first. She told us we would do that first because he did present like Fragile X. So she wanted to test that first, even though we have no one in our family that has that. She wanted to do that. And then if that came back negative, we would do the whole exome. And I'll never forget when we were leaving that appointment, she had asked me to kind of step back and she wanted to speak with me privately and talk about just a godsend. The geneticist, she just, you know, embraced me and told me that no matter what the outcome is, I want you to know that this is not anything that you did. This is not because it was amazing. She knew that I probably had blamed myself for whatever reason. And, you know, because it was it because I had the flu and I was pregnant? Was it because I took Tylenol? Was it because I missed some of my, you know, did I miss some of my pills? I mean, I can't remember if I missed a prenatal the day before, you know, just all this, because you just want to answer, you know, anything. And I really beat myself up, like just about everything. Did I work out too much? I mean, just crazy stuff. And so she really just, reassured me that this is not anything you did. And so that was really, really special for me. And I think she knew in her heart that we were probably going to find something out. So, then COVID happened. And so we didn't hear anything for months and months, and it was agonizing. So we got a my chart message that Fragile X was negative and that we needed to send in the next kit for whole exome. So that got sent in right after COVID started, and then we waited some more and we got pregnant. And I was a basket case, just wondering if, what Miller has, could our next child have? What is this? Are we ever going to find out anything? And I'll never forget, it was July 28th. So this has been going on really since, I think, right when COVID happened. We finally got Fragile X back, and then we started whole exome. So it took a very long time. I think they said at one point there was just like a handful of people working in their lab at that time. It was just, it took a while. And so it was July 28th, and I got a phone call, and it said Texas Children's Hospital. And I knew, I just knew in that moment that, I mean, I just, the pit in my stomach, I knew, and that phone call just, you remember it, just, it changes your life. It truly changed our life. And then knowing that I had to then go upstairs where Michael was working and tell him. And so, anyway, but then I had to tell her, well, I never heard of SYNGAP. And when she told me, what it was, I just blurted out, "We're pregnant. And, could this child have it too?" And there was just silence. And I thought, okay. Hello? And she was like, "I'm sending a message to your geneticist right now." And so she called me back, the counselor called me back, and we had a phone call with our geneticist at like 8 o'clock the next morning. And so yeah, and that's what brought us to you guys. And so it was a journey, but it's just amazing how you just get those intuitions and those instincts about your own child that something is just not right.
So Nathan being our second kid, and my kids are 16 months apart. I mean, we had like no downtime in between, and our memories were very fresh. We had friends who had children who were the same age as both of our children, so we were watching all of these babies develop at the same time. And so with Nathan, when he wasn't developing and meeting those milestones, like we knew something was up, and we kept asking, and our pediatrician was really good about, helping us try to find some answers, though it was, well, he's not too behind yet. Let's wait and see if he catches up. Sometimes they're just slower, and let's wait and see. So there was a lot of waiting and seeing, which frustrated us to all end because, at some level, like you're right, Nathan was this like perfect little angel baby who never cried and never made a fuss about anything. And then when we were, it wasn't that we were getting pushback, but when we weren't getting the answers or what we wanted to hear from some of our providers, it was like, well, can we just go to the next step sooner rather than later? Can we just find out sooner? And so, I mean, we had, we started with a swallow study because he wasn't eating baby food. He would just hold his mouth wide open. And that led us to, I mean, we like event, did you have that too? Miller did that?
No, we didn't have the swallow study, but we would just ask her, "He's just holding food in his mouth. He's not, he's barely swallowing it. What's going down is just sliding down his throat or coming back out of his mouth. We're not chewing. We're, it's wild."
But we like we eventually got to Vanderbilt, and we had we saw a GI doctor there, we saw developmental, and we saw a neurologist. And at this point, it was so early on in our journey. I want to say Nathan was like 9 months old at this point when we were at Vanderbilt, and he wasn't displaying epilepsy yet. And the neurologist was like, okay, so what are the therapies you're doing? You know, and we said, we're doing OT, we're doing PT, we're doing, feeding therapy, we're doing all of speech therapy, all of it. He's like, well, no matter what the cause is, you're already doing all of the things anyway. So a diagnosis at this point won't help. And Kevin was like livid. He couldn't believe that like that was it. Right. Well, and so he's like, well, should we do genetic testing? And the neurologist was like, well, I mean, right now there's no reason to come back in 6 months and let's talk about it then. Right. And so like for us, if that first neurologist, even before he had seizures, had said, you know what, even though you're doing all the things, you clearly want answers, let's just do it. Right. Yeah. That, I mean, sure, we probably would have paid for that, but we would have paid for that.
That's right.
And gladly, because it would have led us to the source.
Yes.
Like the thing that was causing all of the symptoms. And while it was a little bit reassuring knowing that we were already doing everything that we could possibly do as far as therapies and school interventions, and I mean, like all of everything, we were in every single program we could get him into. I agree with you in that I don't think that Nathan's development would have improved at all by having that diagnosis, but it would have given me peace of mind and the assurance that it wasn't caused by us,
right?
And the community sooner.
Yes. Yeah. And I, same way, because I would just, I can't tell you, well, I'm sure you know that the amount of time I was spending Googling things, asking people at work, researching stuff in my textbooks. I mean, I was just, I would have to leave class sometimes because I would get, like, especially when we were doing neurology and pediatric neurology, it would become so overwhelming knowing that my classmates are going to treat my child possibly, or my classmates are seeing me struggle. They were super supportive, but it was really hard. It was just a really hard season of life. Just not knowing, you know, that's really hard.
And then, so I'm curious, I want to know how your genetic counselor talked you through what they thought SYNGAP was going to look like for Georgia. If they had any idea about her.
So this was when we were pregnant with Miller. William, number three.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. And so she did not really know. She did say that the odds were probably very low, but I just don't think that she knew enough about SYNGAP to feel confident saying, I would not worry too much. The odds are extremely low. Like any other person having a child, the odds would be about the same, you know. Pretty much. Of course, there are exceptions that we know of, but she was very, very gentle the way we discussed it. She could sense that, like, immediate sadness and then the immediate switch over to paranoia, like, very quickly. I think my emotions changed. Just the silence, like, oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. And then, oh my gosh, we have a baby on the way in the next, you know, 4 months. She sent me a bunch of information to start reading over and all that, but definitely reverted me back to our geneticist, who then just reassured us over and over again that the odds were super, super low. But I see a lot of parents, I've seen a lot of people post in our group about that. If they're going to have another child or they're thinking about having another child, And although we didn't have the diagnosis before we had, before we got pregnant, I can, it really, I still, I think deep down had a little bit of fear, just because I think that's just normal. I don't know. Maybe it's not normal for everyone, but yeah.
It is for us.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you just pray for a healthy child and, you know, but yeah, she talked a lot about epilepsy too that day on that phone call. And that was really, even though I kind of checked out because I just got really, it just got really cloudy, you know, as she was talking and I'm thinking, oh, so he's probably having seizures. And that night, I actually laid on the floor next to him all night long to see if he was having seizures because I was scared to death. I really was that we were just, he was having these seizures at night and we were missing him. And we spent all this money getting all these cameras set up to watch him. And I just lay next to his bed and just, I was so worried. But yeah, that was a tough day.
Yeah. You mentioned that, it was Texas Children's Hospital that you received a phone call from that day. Were you guys living in Texas at the time?
We were in around the Shreveport, Bossier City, Louisiana area. So we had started going to Texas Children's in Houston about a year and a half prior to that. Our geneticist left. And so we didn't have one in Shreveport to go see. And it was either go to Dallas or go to Houston. And our pediatrician sent it to Houston instead of Dallas. But it ended up working out great because they were familiar with SYNGAP down there, which they were familiar and come to find out in Dallas too. But it just all worked out really well. So, yeah.
Oh man, gosh! I mean, it hits me every time. Just talking about how you find out, mm-hmm. what it was like reliving those feelings every single time. Like I try to put on my podcast voice and face and not feel you know. But man, Julie, it's so hard because I can relate to all of those. Mm-hmm. fears and feelings so viscerally. So that you are willing to be so open and raw is very moving. Thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, I think it's important you know, that we share the really good and the really hard and, because I know there's not one SYNGAP parent out there that has not, you know, felt these emotions and went down this diagnosis journey. And, you know, I think that we get asked a lot, okay, with the diagnosis, did you get peace? Did you get, 'cause you have answers now. Well, you know, I think the straight answer is, yeah, I mean, it's great that you have an answer and it's great that it gave you community, but it brings a lot of sadness and grief and just brokenheartedness that, like I said, that day, I'll never forget that day because it truly changed our lives. And so, you know, I think that's it. You just have to really process how your life is going to change and your children's lives are going to change. And it is so wonderful to know now. But you also really have to give yourself time. And that's exactly what we did and have done and continue to do today.
Yeah. Well, let's do just the opposite. Let's talk about some of the best things about Miller and the things that you are most proud of about him.
Gosh, there's so many things about Miller. He really is He's a really cool kid. He's, I always just say Miller's just joyful. He's just joy. Miller doesn't know that he has SYNGAP. Miller doesn't really know that he's different. While his days look the same, there's so much joy found in his simplicity and routines, and he likes what he likes, and the little things mean so much to him. And it's cliche, but it's just beautiful because the little things mean the world and make him so happy. Miller loves baseball. He plays Miracle League baseball, which is wonderful.
Oh, fun.
He loves that. And our other two love going and watching him. He loves swimming. He swims at the YMCA, and that's amazing. And that's another, it's just, there's so many great things about swimming for our kids. It's therapeutic. It builds all kinds of muscle strength. It's the sensory aspect of it. It's just wonderful. He loves it. Miller loves music, loves it. I cannot tell you enough how much this kid loves his music. He also loves his books. He loves reading. It's really, it's been cool to watch his little brain just explode with reading and spelling words. That's another thing that he's really into right now, is spelling words and big cool. words, and using his communication device and spelling out all kinds of words, and just watching him learn. It's really cool. Our kids are always say like they never stop learning. Like, our kids are smart. And while they learn differently, like, we got to keep pushing them, because I know that it's in there, and I've seen it with Miller. It's just, it's been really cool to watch. He's a great kid. He loves his siblings. I think sometimes they drive him a little crazy because they're really loud. He loves them so much. His most favorite thing in the world to do is sit on our back porch. And you know, our kids like sprawl out on furniture. Like, Miller doesn't just sit. He like lounges. And this kid loves to just lounge on our back porch and watch TV. That's probably, and read books. That's probably his most favorite thing to do. Especially right now because it's cool outside. But he's a great kid.
Yeah, I can imagine that you have a wonderful view out your back porch too. Like, I think about, I just envision you like having seen some of your family photos and photos of Miller, like on the golf course greens. I just like that to me is your backyard.
Yeah, it is really cool. They would go out there a whole lot more if we would let them. But it's cool. It is. We love being up here in the mountains and, or the foothills, excuse me. But it's special.
Yeah. And okay. So I want to chat about Scramble for SYNGAP. This was your idea for a fundraiser, and you had been kind of like getting involved with SRF for a minute, and then you're like, I'm thinking about doing a golf tournament. How did you decide that a golf tournament was it, that was going to be your thing?
I really don't even remember. I mean, clearly we live on a golf course, so there's that. But I've never played golf in my life, so I know nothing about golf. I was on the phone earlier with a friend. She was teaching me about the pars and just crazy stuff. I still don't know a whole lot. But we knew we wanted to start fundraising on a different, maybe like a different level. Because Michael and I are both pretty outgoing, and we just weren't sure what to do. And so somehow a golf tournament came up, and I thought, well, I guess we can give it a shot. And I started talking with Michael about it. And then we brought Jen Robert on board. And Jen thought it was a great idea too. And it got started. And last year was the first year. And so it was great. Yeah. So I don't really know where the idea came from though. I think we just, because we live on the course, but yeah, we've never played in one. Michael's never played in one. We've never helped anyone throw one before. So we definitely were a little bit in over our heads last year.
But now you're pros.
Oh, I don't know about that. But yeah, it has been easier this year. I will say that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell me what the day. Okay, first of all, tell me when Scramble for Sin Gap is this year.
It is October 7th, so a little under 2 weeks away. And yeah, October 7th is the date.
I know, I can't wait. And tell us where it is and then how we can learn more about it. And I will not forget, we will post links in the show notes.
Perfect. So it is going to be in our backyard in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. And the course is called Cherokee Valley Course and Club. So it's a great course, overlooks the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. So it's challenging. It's just we hear it's very challenging, but it's also very beautiful and a fun course. Everyone's tells us that too. It's a lot of fun to play. And more information can be found at singap.fund/scramble. And we also have a Facebook page and an Instagram page, and it's just Scramble for Singap. As far as we know, we're the only Scramble for Singaps out there, so you should be able to find us.
Cool. And what is the day going to look like this year?
So it is going to start at noon, and it is a 4-person scramble, and we'll start things out with they'll get a lunch. There's a restaurant actually at the club. And so that restaurant is catering our golfers lunch. So they'll get lunch. Then they'll start the tournament at noon. And it'll have contests and games and a few other little surprises along the way. And then we'll return back to the restaurant area, which overlooks, I believe, the 18th hole. I believe it's that one. So it's a nice venue. And we'll do our awards. Last year, we did party for Singap, which was our after party, and we had a silent auction and a band. And this year, we decided just to do the tournament and see how that goes. And who knows, maybe next year we'll bring back the after party. But that might be an every other year thing. So this year, we've simplified it a little bit, but still a big impact. And we're excited. The planning's going really good. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
And you've had a lot of people sign up to play.
Yeah, we haven't filled all of our teams, but we don't have that many spots left. If what happens last year happens this year, then we filled them up almost close to like a couple of days before. I think golfers are a little bit more, just wait and see, which makes us, especially me,
the planner, going to do.
Yes. What's the weather going to be like? What is, what is this? What else is going on? October is very busy. So, people kind of wait and see. But it ended up, it was, three or four days before we had filled up every single team and had people still asking. So that would be amazing. Wonderful. We'll see. I hope.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm so excited for you. I loved the pictures from last year and I can't wait to follow the event as it's happening this year too.
Yeah, Yes, thank you, Ashley. We're excited. I'm hoping we can do more social media things this year and keep our family and friends near and far posted on the day. So definitely be looking out for that stuff on our stories and everything. It's going to be a great day.
I'm going to do that. All right. So, the thing that I like to ask everybody at the end of our conversations is whether you have any advice for how to live a happier life with SYNGAP.
So I thought a little bit about that, in some of the questions that we had talked about. And I really just, one word that kept coming to my mind is something that I personally have been working on a lot is patience. I am a very impatient person, I think by nature. And so I've really had to take a step back and slow down and have more patience. And Miller is teaching me that. My other kids are too. And I think Michael would agree that that's something that we're really working on. And to just continue to give myself grace, especially in the hard moments, and to be kinder to myself, because raising a Sungapian and two other kids is not easy. Shout out to all the parents raising more than that. I mean, it's hard work every day. Miller challenges us every single day, and so I've really had to remind myself, Grace, Julie, Grace, okay, like, you're not super mom. You're not super woman. You cannot do it all. I told my mom earlier, there's not enough days, hours in the day. But that although this life is hard, there's also so much more joy. And it's hard to remember that in those moments, in the moments where Miller is just, having, as we say, like a SYNGAP snap. And to walk away from that and remember that he was created perfectly and he is a masterpiece. And I have to remember that because in those moments, it's hard not to. It's hard to remember that, it's hard to remember all the good. And so I would, that's something, advice that I've given often to just remember that the good is far outweighing the bad. And I try to remember something, I'll try to walk away from that and say, oh gosh, when Miller did this, it was so funny or so cute or so sweet, or Miller's starting to say, I love you, mama. Like, remember that. Like, remember those moments as I'm walking away from a bad snap, and another, that's a lot to say, but another thing is like lean into your community and let them in. Because we didn't for a long time. In fact, we actually did the complete opposite and walked away from our community because we were in such deep grief and sadness and living in a very dark place because we didn't know what to do. And now we can look back and say, don't do what we did. Lean into your people. Let them in and let them help you. They want to. They love you and they love your child. They love your Sungapian. And so let them in. Teach them about Sungap. Teach them about SRF and let them love on you because they want to.
Yeah.
So that is something that I'm like, let your people in. If they're asking, it's because they want to.
Yeah.
So that's a
Yeah,
lot of
no.
advice.
No, I'm it's we I think we all need to hear that more often. So that's great advice. We should probably just put that on loop.
I know. I have to, I mean, myself, I've got a lot of these things wrote out, honestly. I was looking at them the other day during a really hard day. It's just just truths, you know, that I have to replay in my head because, you know, you are worthy, and it's just, it's hard in those moments, you know? And so, just little snippets here and there to just keep me going in the moments where I see myself going down the rabbit hole, you know, I see where this is leading and try to stop it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Julie, I'm going to say thank you. And I hope your family starts recovering quickly and very quickly before we end. I'd like to do something that I never do on this podcast. I'm going to take a moment and ask everyone who can to like and subscribe the show. If you are so inclined, please also leave us a review. Think about when you were recently diagnosed and searching the internet for any information about SYNGAP1. With more people who like and subscribe and leave reviews for podcasts like this, the more people will be able to find our show and listen to our stories sooner and step into that community. So selfishly, I'm going to ask you to like and subscribe. It's not because I want to see my social media cachet just shoot through the roof. It's because I want more people to find us sooner. So please do that for us. It really will help. If you aren't aware, we have established an SRF podcast channel, which now hosts three amazing podcasts. It's SYNGAP 10, SYNGAP Stories, and Cafe SYNGAP. So please find our shows, like us, and help us find other families to join the big community that we have in SRF. All right, everybody. Thank you, Julie. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
See you all very soon. Yes. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and like us wherever you're listening. For more information about today's guest and SYNGAP1, please check out our show notes. Your suggestions are always welcome. Please email us at ed@curesyngap1.org.